Right. Thank you.
This meeting is being recorded.
Okay. And then should we do roll call?
Yes.
Kathy?
Bill Cover.
I'm here.
Jeff Jones.
Here.
Bruce Utter.
Here.
Andy Rich.
Here.
Sharon Tobias.
Here.
Dan Crosby.
He's muted, but he said here.
And John Dashner.
Sorry.
He's here.
Joining us, we have our legal counsel, Andrew Ramos, general manager, Tyler Mayo, and Craig Lutz, LRPC chair, and myself, Kathy.
Whoa, I didn't get promoted.
We forgot to tell
and Tom.
Oh, I said chair, huh? Oops. You just got a new job.
Nice try.
Oh, and Tom Schneider.
Yes, Tom
that.
Schneider, our LRPC chair training, our new LRPC chair.
There we
Once
go.
Once we find one.
Yeah. Great. So welcome this morning. Happy New Year, I guess. So the first item is a public comment. Is there any member of the public who wishes to say anything? Oh, I started without your name. But...
Sorry. We're good okay. to go. Here we go.
I just jumped right in. So I gather there's nobody from the public who wishes to say anything. So we'll move on to the consent calendar. So if anybody has any questions about any of these items, we can remove it from the consent calendar, or we can receive a motion to approve the consent calendar as it is.
This is Dan. I move that we accept the consent calendar.
I'll second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any negatives? I guess not. All right. It passes. So the next item is the committee reports for the general manager report with Tyler Mayo.
Okay. So over the last couple months, or actually since our last executive meeting we had there in December, all we really have had is the big snowstorm. We lost power. The guys did really well with getting the backup generation going and keeping it refueled. There really wasn't a whole lot of holdup for us. It was a typical storm that knocks out our SCADA, knocks out our power, and came back within about 2 days. Yeah, everything on that was really well. The last couple days, I have been talking with MC Engineering, and they are 99% done with our map. I found a couple mistakes that Jose still needed to correct, and we should be getting our printed as-built and finally get our working map. It's been a very tiring adventure with MC once again. It's been over a year that we've been waiting for that map. So that's pretty much all I really have to report.
So Tyler, I can't remember exactly, but I think that their estimate was like 10,000 or 12,000. Is that still holding?
Yes, as of right now, they're still under that. I have a final bill that I will receive from them. I have yet to pay one of the invoices. We have three that are outstanding going all the way back to May that I refused to pay until they showed me some type of work that I just recently got. So I told them I will pay at least two of those bills. We need to discuss another one because of the mistakes they had made in the original part. I didn't feel it was fair for us to pay Jose's hourly wage for him to correct mistakes that they shouldn't be making because they were the ones who drew up the project.
So have we accrued for those invoices in the 2021 financials?
I believe it's a part of it still. Yes, I think it's 12,500 is what was allowed in the contract. As of right now, they're about $8,000.
Yeah, we don't want to be paying for those in this year. We should
Should have been money from last year, possibly even the year before. I think you guys approved it. It was long before I was a general manager.
I think we thought it would be done by like March or April of 2021. Mm. So, I mean, I think we thought it'd be done sooner, but you know, when the project dragged out, it went on to 2021, but I never expected it to go to 2022.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to get multiple maps though, you know, many copies, right?
Yes. They're supposed to be map. 3-foot by 4-foot maps, a couple laminated ones, some, I believe there's another size that was, it's like 2-foot by 3-foot. The ones the guys will have in the truck. And then the as-builts, which is a really thick book of a 3-foot by 4-foot pages. That's real detailed of every street.
Well, that'll be good to have that done.
Yes.
So, so anything else, Tyler?
Nope, that's all I have to report this month.
Okay. The LRPC. Tom?
Okay. So if we go past the cover page there, first area that we're going to talk about is a review of the reserves investment status. And there's been a couple of Zoom meetings with our investment financial investment advisor at Edward Jones over the last week, and we'll get into that as I go through this. But at first, I just wanted to provide a little background, and I didn't know Lee wasn't going to be here, so I'll just speak for her too. At the close of the USDA project, which was occurred on January 20th of last year, we were reimbursed $1,921,459. And as a result of that, Lee needed to find banks to deposit the funds. Since the FDIC limit at any bank is 250, we were looking at approximately 8 banks in addition to the 5 that we were already in that we'd need to separate the money in. As an alternative approach, at that time, Lee spoke to Sarah Oski at Edward Jones Financial Advisor, and through those discussions, and Lee explained the situation that was approaching. Sarah suggested investing in a low risk, short term government bonds for safety and steady growth, and identified a JP Morgan short duration bond, which showed a 10-year performance of 1.6% and an average annual return of 1.47%, with the last 5 years being 1.89%. So with that information, Lee and I had a couple discussions, and with the bank savings account interest averaging less than 0.1%, we felt that investing our capital asset reserve, which the amount is was $801,721, in the J.P. Morgan short duration bond, and the other $546,000 into a J.P. Morgan interest-bearing savings account, that would provide a low risk and potentially more favorable return than just putting it in a savings account. Next chart. So the communication that followed from there was, and I wanted to bring this point at the top to bear right away. Although the J.P. Morgan government bond fund investment was communicated to the long range committee and the board, as I'll go through in the next chart or two here, it was inadvertently not formally voted on and approved by the board as it should have been. This was an unintentional oversight. I think what happened was, as we approached the end of, the close of the project, it got kind of hectic, And, you know, we just used the information we had and proceeded forward without presenting it and going through the approval process at a board meeting. But in the January 9th LRPC meeting, I had this chart in there that showed these couple bullets about the Edward Jones business account application. And it mentioned that during our budgeting process for 2021, the business application with Edward Jones was factored into the our Blue Lake Springs Mutual Water Company budget. And we set up an account for the JP Morgan Government Bond Fund. And my recommendation was to apply only the reserves fund amount of the $801,721 to the short-term bond, which was based on an estimated, based on our discussions with Sarah, based on an estimated 1.9% interest, which could amount to $15,000 of interest income as compared to less than a tenth of a percent in savings. In the January financials email that Lee sent out to the board on February 16th, she also mentioned basically the same thing, that we received that amount from at the close of escrow, and that the 801-721 would go into the low-risk J.P. Morgan account at Edward Jones, and the reserves fund would 546 would go into the savings account, and the balance was going into our normal operating accounts at a couple other banks. So if you go to the next page.
Tom, a quick question. The 546 in the savings account, I thought the insurance limit was 250. So, excuse me.
250 per bank.
Right. But you're showing 546 at Edward Jones, which is one bank.
Yeah, I'd have to talk to Lee to find out exactly how that works. If it's, since it's a, you know, financial institution instead of a bank, you know, investment company, I don't know if the rules are different.
Okay.
They are different.
But that did occur.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're different.
Okay.
This is Dan. So is that $546,000, is that insured at all? Or is that all at risk?
It's insured. I don't have the details, but it's insured.
Are we absolutely certain of that? Because if we're investing in an Edward Jones fund, it would not be insured. It would vary with the market rates.
I guess we'll have to be totally sure, we'll have to get with Lee once she gets back. I'm not 100% sure.
We can contact Sarah too and find out.
Yeah.
That's a great question. Sorry.
Yeah. So as far as
I can tell, on a follow up list. Kathy?
Yes, I will.
All right, thanks.
So going back through all my records, I believe the first time it was presented to the board was in this March 13th board meeting. And this chart since then was presented a few different times at board meetings, but it just showed the breakdown that we just described. Any questions on that chart? Next chart, please. So where do we stand now and potential paths forward? You know, unfortunately, based on the economy, the bond market performance in 2021 did not turn out nearly as favorable as compared to past history. You can see there how our investment in the bond fund panned out as the year went on. Started out okay, but the last several months of the year, dropped off quite a bit. So, and if you factor December in there, which I got a day or two ago, the amount we're down $3,749, resulting in about a 0.47% decrease. So based on that, I think, Bill brought this to our attention in the last board meeting or a couple board meetings ago. So we decided that, more discussion needed to occur here to find out, what our options were. And so in an effort to look for more favorable options with Edward Jones, a Zoom meeting was held on November 30th with Sarah, Tyler, Lee, Sharon, Bill, and myself. During that Zoom meeting, Sarah provided some options to us. There were three of them that were comprised of a combination of short-term bonds, income, and money market combinations. Based on that meeting, some discussion came up about some upcoming Treasury announcements that were going to be made. So we decided to hold off on any changes to our current investment until Sarah could provide those any announcement updates to us and try to decide if those announcements would give us a better feel for how things were going to proceed in 2022. Another follow-up Zoom meeting was held with the same group January 5th and followed actually by another one on January 6th to discuss the 2022 forecast based on any of those announcements. From that Zoom meeting that was held on the 6th, we received yesterday afternoon, which I haven't had time to go through it in a whole lot of detail, but Sarah provided us with some further options to review, which I believe still need more review and probably more discussions with Sarah. provided, rather than the one bond that we're in, some options that included other bonds, money market account, and some equities, and another option that also included an inflation managed bond. So, being in the one bond, our performance in 2021 was a negative 0.31%. So what I could discern from looking at the information, which is pages and pages of information that Sarah provided, the one hypothetical that she provided was all bonds. So it's not just the one short duration bond that we're in. It provided several others several other bonds, the U.S. Equity Fund, and another one that's called a tax-aware real return investment. And so that scenario in 2021, from what I could discern, was 2.16% return. The year before was 3.74%. She provided another scenario that included the inflation managed bond fund, Bill had brought that one up to her during the Zoom meeting. So if you factor that one in, the 2021 return percent would have been 1.96%. And in 2020, it would have been 4.81%. Her third scenario was the bonds and included some stock funds, some securities. And as we know, this stock market had a really good year last couple years. So that one was actually, for last year, would have been 10.78% with that group of bonds and the stock fund, and 10.18% in 2020. So that's kind of where we stand. I don't know, Bill or Sharon, Tyler, if you guys have any comments, if you were able to look at any of the information Sarah sent. But, you know, I have some feelings, but I'd like to hear if you guys have any input to this and any comments you want to make.
I guess my only comment is our focus really should be on not so much making money on investments, but not losing money.
Right. I know that I think Bill made the same comment during our Zoom meeting. And I agree. I made a comment at the end of the Zoom meeting that just without more discussion, which I think, you know, we probably should have more, definitely, and get whatever inputs we can from everybody. You know, the safest would be just putting all of our investment into a money market. That way we don't risk losing any money. From what I've read and what I've been hearing from Sarah during the meetings, the next few months, I believe that the bonds are going to continue to perform the same way that they had been toward the end of last year. So we risk losing more money. With a money market, we're not going to lose more money. During the next few months, we can see, you know, with all the fluctuations in the market and, you know, the way it's gone over the last part of the last 6 months of last year, you know, I'm no expert by any means, but I just don't have a good feel for the next few months as to what the bond performance is going to be.
And, well, I think Tom, sorry, go ahead.
I think Dan had a question.
Yeah.
First, so okay. Let's go to Dan.
So all these ones that you're talking about, they're bond funds. Why don't we just buy some U.S. Treasury bonds and hold those for as long as we want to hold this $800,000? I mean, they're guaranteed by the government, and they have a face value of what your return is. As you look at throughout the year, your value that you look at will go up and down based on what's going on in the interest market. But, you know, all these funds are kind of somebody in the background buying and selling things in the background, and you don't have any control. And, you know, why, I just don't know why we just don't go buy a government bond and be done with it.
So one thing is I believe we are locked into staying until July. We had an 18-month thing. Otherwise, we pay some penalties to pull the money out.
Just what is it? Is it one bond we're invested in right now, or is it a fund?
No, it's a bond.
It's a fund.
So I think I just have 2 points, and I'll be quiet. One is that we need the money to be somewhat liquid, like in case we need it. And two is anything that requires a forecast of future economic activity, my recommendation is to avoid. That's why I think when Tom said the money market bond would meet both the liquidity and not require forecast for the investment. I mean, anytime you have to forecast, this can happen, right? But we don't know, in the next 6 months, you may double and make twice as much money instead of losing money. So I would just recommend we put it where there's no forecast and there's some defined liquidity where if we need the money, we can get it.
And buy a short enough bond that we can hold it to maturity. Then we don't have to, then we don't have the risk of having to sell it when it may be down.
Is that Craig?
Yeah, it was me.
Okay. Just checking.
And I did find something on the insurance at Edward Jones, if you want me to read that to you.
Please share. Please share with us. I look too, so, but.
All right. Well, they're, you know, it's not FDIC, they're SIPC, but it's a, that's a federal program. But so Edward Jones provides account protection for your securities, except annuities and insurance held in your brokerage account. The Securities Investor Protection Corporation, SPIC, provides $500,000 of coverage for missing securities, including $250,000 for claims of cash awaiting investment. Edward Jones purchases additional protection from underwriters at Lloyd's. This policy covers only theft, misplacement, destruction, burglary, embezzlement, or abstraction. Market losses are not covered by SPIC or additional protection. The aggregate protection limit for all claims is $900 million. I assume the $900 million is relating to the Lloyd's, you know, policies on top.
Right.
Yeah.
So that
I don't, how much else we may have at Edward Jones aside from this account, but the SPIC would probably be, you know, include all the accounts.
But it doesn't really, like you said, it doesn't cover the risk of the investment. So.
Well, no, I don't think. I mean, FDIC doesn't either. That's just for. If someone steals
the bank,
the bank goes bankrupt or someone comes in and steals the money. That's all these things do. Nobody's going
to
cover your investment losses under these programs.
Well, the bank's a savings account, right? So anyway,
one thing we could consider doing. So the reason we went with Edward Jones was we had to find 8 more banks to stay within the FDIC insurance limit. And I think finding banks was difficult because I think we already had 5 banks. So we could look at over the next 6 months, finding more banks that we could do business with to pull the money out of Edward Jones. If that's something that we're interested, I'm just throwing it out there. I'm not saying that's a great idea, but you know, if we want to be, we have some time to fill out the applications. So,
but how would that be different than a money market account at where we have it now? I mean, it would be the same. I mean, 8 banks and, I mean, the whole point, I mean, if you have all the money in a money market, that's the same risk. I mean, you're not losing any money because it stays the same plus whatever in.
Right. You get a tiny, tiny bit of
it. Seems to me, yeah, it'd be easier to manage it in one area. So I think that original decision was, and I agree with that original strategy. So I think we should, based on our last meeting with Sarah, is just this group and maybe one or two people meet with her and see what, and have 3 proposals and then have the board vote on it. I mean, one could be moving it all out to a bank, but we could vote on that, and then you could vote on whether or not we put it in the money market and keep it in JP Morgan and just review it every quarter at the meetings. Or if people want to keep it in the bond funds, that's another option.
Well, are we precluded with Edward Jones from moving money between their investment funds? So I heard, you know, I think Sharon mentioned that there's a penalty that we would incur through July of this year, but that would be if we move money out of Edward Jones.
Out of JP Morgan, yeah, out of JP Morgan.
Yeah.
It's out of JP.
Not Edward Jones, yeah.
If we take the money out of JP Morgan, it will take a loss. Otherwise, she said we can move it laterally in between any different types of JP Morgan accounts. And then that's only until that maturity date, which I believe Sharon said it was July. And as soon as that comes, then we can take the money out of Edward Jones. We could go out of any of those investments and go to something completely secure.
So if we can move money laterally, why don't we just move to a money market?
That's the option right now, is to move mm-hmm. to a money market. I think she said last year it came up with a 0% gain. So it's just to hold your money, and we're not going to gain anything, but we're not going to lose anything.
Yeah, if we wait until July, heaven only knows what's going to happen with the bond market between now and then. Right. Although that said, the bond market generally moves opposite of what interest rates are. So if interest rates are going up, then the bond market should, begin to perform better than it did last year with historically low interest rates.
So what she said,
prices go down and the interest rates go up.
Yeah, she says, as the interest rates go up, this is what I wrote down. It was early too, so bear with me. As the interest rates go up, the price of the bonds go down, and we would lose money for a few years.
Yeah, initially they go down. Over the long term, they go up, I think right. She said.
So if you look at the end game, if you're in there 10 years, you'll be fine. But if you're in there for the short term, it's not recommended, maybe.
Right, but it's still forecast. Something we're making an investment that requires a forecast. And the second right. thing is, in the last 3 or 4 years, I think anyone would be challenged to say that these markets have behaved the way they have historically. So I think there's too many outside influences. We don't know what the government's going to do with stimulus. We got inflation for the first time in a long time. So I personally would like to put it in something we don't have to forecast, even if we make zero money. But anyway.
So this $800,000, is this for our asset management program, right?
It's if you look at our reserves fund policy, the 801 covers the capital assets. It covers emergency funds, operating funds. It's a reserves fund policy that includes several areas, one being the capital assets.
And the first we would draw on, that's like 5 or 10 years away, correct?
We have a few areas that could come up in the short term, not huge significant ones, but the Tyler, when was that other section of the infrastructure improvements on the books for? That was about 5 years out?
Yeah, unit 13, I believe it was at least 5 years out. I think it had it as long as up to 10, but it really just depends on how much we gain every year in reserves. Once we hit I believe it was quoted at somewhere around the $2 or $3 million mark.
Uh-huh. And, yeah.
Once we got to there, we would be able to do unit 13, which is the last of the old piping.
Just so you guys know, Joe Morgan joined our meeting.
Hey guys. Good morning, Joe.
So there's the 800,000 here, and then there's the other 546. That's reserves too, correct?
Correct.
So I think liquidity is not overly important on this. I mean, you can, if you buy bonds, you can always sell them in the future. You might lose a little money depending on the interest rates, but I don't see this $800,000 being used until 2030 or whenever we get around to do unit 13. So putting in the money market and making no money when we know we're not going to touch this, we're probably not going to touch this for 10 years, is not a good investment strategy.
Yeah, but then you would recommend having a professional bond fund manager handle the money like we're doing right now.
I think there's a middle ground as well. If you just buy a government bond and you ladder them by maturity dates, you buy some that are 2 years, you buy some that are 3 years, you buy some that are 5 years, you hold them to maturity, and they always
I agree. But that's what a bond fund manager does. You have a fund that's what they do.
They're trading. I'm not talking about trading. I'm just talking about...
Yeah, but they hold them for 2 years or 1 year or whatever. And the reason they trade is you end up like this if you don't trade right. But
I'm not following you, but okay.
Well, the bonds sell bonds.
I understand, but we're talking about not having to buy and sell because we're subject to market risk. If you hold in a maturity, you don't have that risk.
So the bond could be when you get ready to sell it, then it could be lower than what you pay the face value.
I agree with that, but that's what we're trying to avoid, right?
Yeah, but you can't. It's a forecast. Well, anything that's forecast.
Okay, no.
I agree with Craig. I mean,
we go out, you buy a 1-year bond, you buy a 2-year mm-hmm. bond, you buy a 3-year bond. Most likely you don't have to sell them because it'll mature and you just roll it over into a new bond. That gives you more liquidity. And, you know, if we have to cash them all in, we have to cash them all in, but I think that's unlikely.
But if you hold them till maturity, you get the stated.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no risk.
They'll go up and down in market value until maturity date, and then they are what they are, they're par.
Yeah. I agree. I think having a fund is somebody else's playing with our money. There's risk there. They have other interests. I mean, we just want safe money and make a little bit. And so government bond is a good way to go and buy it directly. You don't have to go through a fund.
Yeah.
So let me make this observation, listening to the various points of view. If we put this into our shareholder perspective of 1,700 shareholders, there could be just a tremendous amount of debate around this issue, as I suspect there would be. So maybe the appropriate strategy should be to invest this in a way that safeguards the principal amount and at the same time offers us some element of liquidity as time goes by. So I'm kind of in the mindset of no interest is better than a loss of principal value, and money market would certainly make the most sense in my mind. Because
I agree with you, Andy.
Yeah, I don't think at the end of the day we want to find ourselves in a debate with 1,700 shareholders as to why we invested one way or the other. It'd be easy to say that, well, we just took the safest route. Yeah, we didn't make any money, but we didn't lose any money either.
And I don't think I agree with Andy and Bill. And from my perspective, we could put it in the money market. We could change our options anytime we want. You know, if a month goes by or 2 months goes by and we all get together and discuss it and feel that a change from having it all in the money market is appropriate, we can do that. I mean, so, but initially to cut the losses, I believe that until we see how the markets go in the first few months here, the safest thing would be in the money market.
So Sharon, would you like a motion to address this?
Yes, I would. Go ahead.
Hey, Bill.
I make a motion to move it into the money market fund within the JP Morgan portfolio so we don't pay the penalty.
I'll second that.
I think Kathy, could we do like a vote where we know that everybody
roll
voted?
Roll call.
That's it. Thank you, Bill.
I'm trying to impress you, Sharon.
Well, you're doing a great job. Everybody is.
Bill Cover.
Yay.
Jeff Jones.
Yes.
Bruce Utter. Yes or no?
Yes. Sorry, I was muted.
Andy Rich.
Yes.
Sharon Tobias.
Yes.
Dan Crosby.
No.
And John Dashner.
Yes.
Thank you.
So the motion carries, right?
Yes.
I do think we should revisit this every month or two. Like, our next meeting is in March, but there's nothing wrong with us taking a look at the February financials or the January financials and see how we do, because we can make the change on Monday to get into a money market. And I think we could do more research, you know, for what we want to do come July when we can pull the money out. I don't know who would like to lead that charge. I'm looking for a volunteer.
No, I think that should be, I should, since I'm the treasurer, I should be one of the committee members.
Definitely.
I don't necessarily have to be the lead. Maybe somebody else can
right.
be the
lead.
We probably need to go.
So,
John, I can hear you say something. Oh, go ahead, Dan.
So, Sharon, what exactly are you proposing be done?
Well, I think this is something that, you know, we should revisit at every board meeting, just where we're at with this. And it could be just be part of the financial report that Lee can report on or she can include in the packet. But I think we, if this is something, I think looking at the buying treasury bonds or doing something ourselves might be worth considering. I just think come July, we should reassess what we're going to do with the money. If we're going to leave it in Edward Jones or we want to branch out or something, that's all. I don't know if that's what the board wants. So for now, we are leaving it in the money market, right?
Yeah, and I don't know if we talked to Edward Jones and said we want you to buy government bonds 1 year, 2 year, and 5 year, they would do that. I mean, Morgan Stanley, I do that all the time. I tell them what I want to buy and they buy. It's not in a fund. So,
okay.
You know, if we wanted to move it to Treasury sooner, I don't think that the July date would affect us unless we want to take the money out of that investment firm.
If it leaves right. The JP Morgan funds, I think we pay a penalty. So we can do the lateral move into the money market, a JP Morgan money market account. But right. After but July, we can do what we want within Edward Jones or pull everything out. I'm not suggesting we pull everything out, but.
I think the comment by Dan is that if we won't have to, if we take it out of the JP Morgan, we won't have to pay the JP Morgan management fees. We would only pay the Edward Jones. So you would save some money there. But we need a plan before we make that kind of decision
right.
on how it would work. I mean, if that's something, Dan, you sounds like you know a lot more than I do about buying them directly. You want to be on the team and be good.
Yeah, I can do that.
I mean, Tom, I'd love you to be on this team. I'm not trying to eliminate you all. I just know what don't know what your time commitment is, and I want to drag you in for another 10 years unless you want to be.
Yeah. No, I'm willing to help, you know, as long as the need for me continues to exist, depending on how the long range planning committee goes, you know, as far as the reorganization.
Right.
But I'm willing to help as long as I'm still, you know, still on board.
Okay. Well, I think
Craig would be sounds like Craig is pretty familiar with, you know, how these type investments work too. So my recommendation is if we do have a committee that on a month to month basis, reviews how the market's progressing and how our investments are progressing. I'd just like to throw Craig's name in there. Craig, I don't know if you would have the time to help out there or not, but,
yeah, I have no objection to that.
Can we put this under the long range planning since that's what it is? That's what I was intending, but I didn't really spell that one out. I just have a under the Long Range Planning Committee?
All right. So, Sharon, come Monday, who has the responsibility of, you know, talking with the appropriate people? I guess it's
Sarah.
Sarah, about moving to money market.
I normally it would be Lee, but I think Tyler or myself could do it.
Well, I think you should have at least two board members there when the conversation.
Yeah, if I'm moving that money to, let's say, the money market, I'd like Bill to probably be there because you're a part of this or have been.
Well, and yeah.
Either Sharon or Dan or one of these or
okay.
somebody that's going to be a part of this, just because it would be nice to have a couple other people
sure.
making sure we're doing what the board wants to be done with this money.
Well, I can do it. And Bill, that would be great. Unless okay. someone wants to replace me on this phone call or Zoom meeting. So.
I can run down to the office whenever Tyler just let me know.
Okay. Yeah, I'll get a hold of Sarah Monday and we'll see when we can set something up between the three of us and sit down and make it move. It sounds like everybody wants it to move to the money market right now, though.
That's what we voted on. So, yeah.
Okay.
Almost everybody.
Yeah. Almost everybody. It carried. So.
You may win in the long run, Dan. Don't give right. up.
I will.
Right. I just think it's worth like figuring out what our options are in the long run. Not, you know, this is a good stopgap measure for the next months. But
so I had a question for Andrew. So what is the limitation of board members getting together and meeting on other things like this? How many board members can we have at one time?
Right. You need to have one less than a quorum. So with the 7-member board, that's 3 members at max.
Okay. So if you have more than 4 board members, it's not allowed.
If you have 4.
That's right. Then we're having a meeting. Right. 4 members or more, we're having a meeting, and we have to go through the notice and the formalities.
And a non-board member LRPC member would not impact either.
Correct.
Would not impact that ratio.
Correct.
So Craig, exactly you can be right. there for everything. So.
Yeah.
That's why the LRPC only has 3 board members on it.
Yeah.
So that way the LRPC can meet and not.
Be a board meeting. Yeah, that makes sense.
So.
And to be clear, it's not so the LRPC can act in secret or anything like that. It's really so that the LRPC has the freedom to do business by email and in a, you know, an asynchronous manner that board meetings don't allow.
Well said.
Yes. All right. Are we done with this?
I think so.
Thank you.
I hope so. And we kick this to the curb.
Yeah.
I think we can move on to the next. All right.
So the other topic I wanted to discuss today, that's been ongoing for a few months now, is the reorganization of the Long Range Planning Committee. At the November board meeting, a couple charts were included pertaining to the future structure of the committee and the chair replacement, being myself. One chart that was shown provided a recommendation from Joe Morgan that we, in place of a new chair, consider dividing up the primary committee tasks and assigning them to individual project leads and have each lead report their task status to the board. It was agreed at the board meeting that Sharon, myself, and Andy? Oh, Andy couldn't make it. He was busy that day. But we had a meeting with Sharon, myself, Craig, Tyler, and Lee. We met separately and discussed the possible long-range planning committee structure options and to bring a recommendation back to the board. So the group met on December 2nd and focused on Joe's recommended approach and discussed the potential responsibility and assignment of each task. So during that meeting, a few task leads were suggested. The group also suggested that the chair position would probably still need to be performed in order to schedule and facilitate the long-range committee meetings and compile the status inputs from the project leads for the board meetings. Next chart. So since that December 2nd meeting, the tasks have been identified into possible groupings, along with an estimated percentage of time that's spent on each effort. We'll look at the chart on the next page in a minute, but recommendations that occurred during the meeting included the responsibility of task one, which is the bubbler input, and task four, which is the water usage study and pulling that data, could be assigned to the office staff. And the office staff was Lee and Tyler agreed that that would be possible. Task two, which is compile long-range plan committee status for the board meetings, and task three, which is facilitate the long-range meetings, could be temporarily performed by myself until we found another board or staff member or long-range planning committee member to step up. That was assuming that those tasks were still needed, which was thought by the group that met, that those different tasks would still need to be performed. Task six, which is developing the annual budget with staff, should be the treasurer's responsibility, with the long-range planning committee providing the annual rate structure recommendations. So when the committee was first formed, I was treasurer and long-range planning committee chair, so that the treasurer and the long-range committee, it was all assigned that way. Now that that's no longer the case, you know, working up the annual budget with the staff should reside, in our opinion, with the treasurer. Task nine, long-range planning assignments as directed by the board. Those come up from time to time, and those can be determined on an as-needed basis based on the nature of the request. There's some additional recommendations that we recommended be put into the closed session that we'll get into later. So we can discuss those later. But if we want to go to the next page, we can see the table that was prepared showing the grouping of the tasks. So there's 10 tasks total there. You know, we mentioned the bubbler, the first one. The office staff has agreed to take that over. The next one is to present status updates to the at the board of directors meetings, and to also conduct the long-range planning committee meetings. As I mentioned, we felt that a chair person was still needed for these tasks, and you and I can do it for the next few months here until that gets resolved. Perform water meter usage studies. Again, the office staff agreed to take that one over. Analyze the findings and utilize in the consumptive rate structure development. Didn't really have any ideas for who could assume that task, but that would need to be coordinated with task leads for A and D. provide recommendation in the development of annual shareholders rate structure in parallel with the treasurer's proposed annual budget. So the treasurer, as I mentioned in the prior chart, would work with Lee and the staff to develop the operating budget. And based on other factors, the long range planning committee could get involved in the rate structure. So as conditions change over time, continue to stay abreast of all water source options, being CCWD, additionally purchase water options, and the wells that we still have out there that are potential sources. So this is another question mark. Depending on how this task evolves, it'll require coordination with task leads A and C. Provide ongoing cash flow rate structure and reserves analysis recommendations. Still would need a person to fill that role, and that they would need to coordinate with the lead for E. Undertake long-range planning committee assignments as directed by the board. That's, as I mentioned, is an as needed. So that can be decided as different assignments like that came up. And the last item is to oversee the maintenance of the asset management plan and coordinate annual replacement cost updates together with the Blue Lake Springs management and staff to ensure that our long-term capital asset reserves budget is sufficient. So that one's still up in the air as far as a person being responsible for that as the lead. It requires an annual meeting, coordination with office management and staff to go through the database and see what updates need to be incorporated, and coordination with task lead C and staff on the impacts to the budget and reserves. So, so that's where we stand. I just want to open it up to see if anybody has any comments or questions. There will be some more recommendations that after this meeting came from a couple long-range planning committee members that we can talk about in closed session, but just wondering if anyone has any ideas based on what's presented here.
Yeah, Tom, this is Craig. I thought we were going to meet again as that same committee once you had put this together to discuss, amongst the group. So I read it over, and what you put together made sense. So I was kind of looking for that next meeting to.
Yeah, I'm totally willing to do that. Based on the information that came back from the group that met, I provided that to Lee, and I thought at that point she was going to send it out ahead of this meeting to the board to see if they had any feedback. But it slipped my mind, and I forgot to ask Lee about it. So, but I'm totally willing to discuss this more with the committee, and also get inputs from the board if they have any other further inputs to provide.
Yeah, I'll leave that up to you guys, but I don't think I can participate in the executive or in the executive session since I'm not a board member. Mm-hmm.
You shared your thoughts with Tom though, right?
Well, most of my thoughts were, what you put together looks real good, and I thought I was just under the impression we were going to have a follow-up meeting to go through it and start trying to see what made sense in terms of which to hash out the details.
So, who's chairman of the long-range planning committee?
I am, Tom.
Yeah, so it'd be your decision, Tom, whether or not you're ready to present it, which you've already done.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. It just kind of slipped my mind, I guess, but I think it's a good idea. We can review more of the other thoughts that were pass back to the group after that meeting. from the long, once I sent the this information out to the long range planning committee, I got some further input from a couple of the members. And Craig is right. We never really had a chance to discuss those that feedback that we received. So it might be worth it to go through that prior to, you know, making any further decisions on this. And so we could push off, you know, the final review and trying to resolve this with the board until that happens.
Although it's probably good, it doesn't hurt to get the board's input on, you know, what, how we're framing up the task.
Right. I think in the closed session, and I hopefully, Craig, you saw those comments that were brought forward.
Yeah, I saw.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So we can, so that the board has all the information that we have so far, we can still go through those comments to see if the board has any feedback based on those comments as well. And we can, if any feedback does come back from the board, we can also discuss that in the long range planning committee meeting.
So does any board member have any comments on this chart and Tom's approach that they want to discuss now or wait till executive session?
Well, I think we need to understand what Tom's got up his sleeve for the executive session. You know, personally, what I'd like to see the LRPC do is, you know, tighten up these recommendations. And by that, I mean, you know, fill in the question marks as to who, you know, would be the lead in each of these open categories, like, you know, number five, number seven, number eight, you know, if we can.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, Sharon, maybe you should be a part of that meeting only to help us narrow the focus on who should be the chair.
Right. I think if I join, then it becomes an open meeting, right? Oh,
that's true.
Now we need to figure all that out. Like if the treasurer is going to do the recommendation for, you know, for the rate structure, then does the long range planning committee put together the proposals, and then the chairman of the long range planning committee meets individually with the treasurer? Does that break the open sunshine rule? I mean, that's kind of what I'd like to know.
Well, I think if they, for that particular thing, the LRPC chair doesn't even need to be a board member. So the treasurer could still meet with the LRPC chair and another couple members of the LRPC, and it's not an open meeting.
Okay.
Just to discuss the budget. So, so just for that one specific task, that's what.
Can I bring up one task that I don't see mentioned here? I guess I find it a little bothersome. And I'll preface it with a quick story for my career. I was in the electronics industry for a number of years, and in one place we made our own packages in a belt furnace run by a woman named Lovey Bremer. Well, Lovey left the company, and our yields within weeks started to fall. And the solution took us about 3 months, cost us tens of thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. And the solution was that, unbeknownst to all of us, Lovey, at the end of each day after everyone had gone home, would get a stepladder out and go to the top of the furnace and clean the filter. It wasn't documented anywhere. And because of that, it cost the company a lot of money. And maybe our documentation is in good shape, but I'd be surprised. Small organizations tend not to be very well documented. So my question is, are we happy with our current documentation and procedures and that sort of thing, or do we need to add that as a task?
That's a good point. I don't know what other people think. Do you mean like our rules and regulations or employee responsibilities or just everything in general?
Yeah, if Tyler left the company, do we have documentation about how he does his job, and do we know where to find that documentation?
There's documentation on, let's say, the guys, what they do at the treatment plant. If one day Billy, I, and Vince were all fell off this earth, there's a book down there that is a step-by-step how to run the treatment plant, how to make water. Dave never had a general manager's handbook that told me anything. It was all taught to me from Dave, Lee, Bob, Sharon, Andy. Even now, it's just kind of all been taught to me over the last 8 or 9 months. I don't have a how-to manual to do my job, but the jobs at the treatment plant and making sure we can keep water flowing for our customers. Yes, we have a detailed binder of what to do.
Okay. And is it updated?
Yes.
As changes occur? Okay.
Yes. It's the only changes that have occurred in the past 10 years really was that we added the SCADA system. So the way that we actually operate and do a lot more off the computer screen through SCADA to operate the system is now taking place, where it used to be more manually done. You'd have to go out to each site and turn something on or radio it. There was a way that they had a radio transmitter that went back and forth, but that's all in the past. And yes, that manual has been updated to reflect what to do today.
Okay.
Did we get an O&M manual for the booster pump station, or is it just for this? Okay.
Yes. I have a very large binder for that station.
Okay. All right.
I know that all the operating processes and procedures that have been developed through the long range planning committee are on file.
Okay. Does that sound appropriate to you, Bruce? So,
yeah, it does. It does. Okay. I just wasn't sure how well documented we were. And like I said, most organizations that I've been a part of don't do a great job of it.
Right. No, it's a great question. Thank you.
You know, with that being said, you know, what would need to happen over the next few months or before I was to step down was, you know, go through all the files I have and coordinate with Tyler and Lee and Kathy, and just make sure that, you know, there's nothing that I have down in the details that they would need above and beyond, you know, all the different files that we've shared. Mm-hmm.
I'm sure your archives are pretty massive or extensive, so.
Yeah, my old computer crashed a few months back, and I was super worried. Had to make sure and update them onto my thumb drive. It scared me for a few minutes. I thought I lost everything.
Wow. So does any board member have any comments or suggestions on this chart that Tom has prepared?
I would just like to, you know, make a comment that I heard Tyler say big binder. And if that big binder should disappear, we're up the creek. And I would like to make sure that all of the documentation is in electronics files somewhere, that we scan and do whatever we need to do to get those into files that can be retrieved in case there's a fire or burglary or any of that stuff.
The only one that I would know off the top of my head that isn't on electronic file is the newest one, the one from the booster pump station. I haven't seen an electronic version of that yet, but we do have an electronic version of the how to operate treatment plant.
Great.
Yes.
And that raises an interesting question, Tyler. Do we have cloud backup on all of our data?
I would have to ask AC, but I believe AC has us on a cloud that backs everything up. He comes into our computers about once every couple weeks and cleans up our computers and stores everything in a cloud, is what I believe. The name of it, one second. I'd have to, once I get my computer on here, I would know the name of what the cloud actually is that he uses.
I think you should have got, regarding that pump station manual, I think you should have gotten an electronic version from MC.
There probably is. I just, like I say, I have never seen it yet. Right. I also haven't gone through Dave's 50 some odd thousand files that he has on the computer. I've only worked my way through some of it because Dave didn't have it categorized and broken down into different files. He had everything in the documents file as one after the other. So I had to go through them, which I'm about a third of the way through, and organize it so I know where stuff is.
Yeah, that might be an easier thing to get from Pedri. Yes. It should have been on the thumb drive they gave us with all the as-built.
And I do have as-builts, and I have 7 different thumb drives in my drawer here that are regarding the project.
All right. So maybe it's on one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now that's a good, thank you for bringing that up, that things should be electronic. Jeff, that's a good suggestion. And in the cloud, Andy.
Yeah, most of the time we try to do those 3 methods, or I even have a external hard drive that I back up my personal computer on. So we do have multiple ways that we back up our information.
Yeah, I would think that cloud backup should be automatic. At least, all of my files are just automatically backed up. Anytime I change a document or update a file, it's just done automatically. It's seamless.
Mm. He uses a program called Carbonite.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Carbonite's a good one.
Yeah, I've used Carbonite. That's a good one for sure.
So, Tyler?
Yes.
All those thumb drives that you have at your desk, we had to make sure they're in the cloud also.
Correct. That I'll have to go through with AC or go through the cloud myself and make sure that those are on there. If they're not, I can definitely have him add those to it.
Okay.
Now, who is AC?
AC Barnes is our computer guy, our tech for at the office.
Now, is he insured and bonded?
That I don't know. He was here when I came in, and I never questioned his credentials.
He actually runs the electronics for one of the islands of Hawaii. He lives in Hawaii.
He's warmer than we are right now, is what you're telling me.
No, he has major computer experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, this is an interesting bucket of stuff because, we have shareholder information, data, emails, credit cards, blah, 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 blah. And I would just hope that... And fear that we haven't put this under a microscope, that we might not have all of the safeguards in place that we should have in this age of piracy and privacy.
This goes back to Bruce's comment about that we get documented like big guys do. Even though we're little people, we lose that any of that information. We're in deep trouble.
Right.
Yes.
Kathy, can you add that to an action item to check on the status of AC?
Yeah, we can do that.
I would recommend to entitle it like a document management system.
Mm-hmm.
So we would want to do some type of analysis to where we are and what the recommendation is for a document management system. Because it's not just, I mean, even if a guy's a great computer whiz, if he's not insured and bonded, that's a different question. That's more of a business that, I don't think Andy was asking about his skill set as much as he was about the liability.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think Yeah, so I would categorize something where we do it systematically instead of trying to do one-off questions.
Right. So the action item would be to investigate a document management system to make everything, make sure everything's secure.
Yeah. The other that we had was when we had Mark Honer come in and fix the phones, fix our internet. He monitors our firewall, and he does an excellent job of it. When we have it, the internet goes down for a matter of seconds, he's calling in here and wanting to know what went on here, and he's trying to figure out what's gone on through the firewall. So he sees about everything that comes in through the internet wise.
Who is that?
Mark Honer. He was the guy that we hired to fix our phones and our internet.
Okay.
And he provided a, I want to say it was about a 1 year monitoring of the system.
Okay.
Sharon.
Yes.
This is Andrew. Just to go to Andy's point too, if the water company is concerned about potential data breaches and liability, you may want to also explore cyber insurance, which can protect the water company in the event of a data breach. I know my firm carries it for exactly the same reason. It's not exactly cheap, but it's good protection.
Right. Kathy, are you getting this?
Yes.
All right.
I do also like Black Mountain, that has all of our shareholder information and our billing and everything is in iCloud. So
yeah, that one worries me.
I would recommend we table like details like that, and because once you start in that, we're in the recorded public, right? Or it's not public, this meeting.
The recordings can get posted. So.
Right, so I just think starting to name different places where we're keeping things in the public domain is probably not keeping security.
So I think if the action item can include looking at our different backup systems and where our data is, and fiber insurance, and our overall document management system, and we can get a report at the next meeting or sooner. That would be great. Okay. And it's something that, you know, myself or somebody else can work with the staff on. If there's somebody who, I don't want to dump more on the long range planning committee, but there's something I could work with the staff, or if there's somebody else who's interested.
Yeah, I think I would add to that, Sharon, the broad category of data management service providers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who are all these people?
Yeah, who are all these people, and are they insured and bonded? And because I would imagine that the firewall guy has passwords to various aspects of our system. This is a whole, cybersecurity is just a whole new bucket of worms that. Until I just thought of it, and I don't think we've had the eyes on scrutiny that it certainly requires in this day and age.
Right. Good suggestion. Thank you, Andy.
It's a bucket of worms for sure.
Okay. Thank you. So back to Tom's chart. I'm going to ask again. I think we'll revisit it during executive session. Does that work for you, Tom?
Sure, that's fine.
Unless there's someone wants to say something. I think they're done.
And just to make sure everyone understands, I am going to organize another long-range planning committee meeting to discuss this and the comments that we're going to go over in the closed session. And we can bring the results of our long-range committee meeting back to the board next time we meet.
Great. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Kathy, can you scroll down? Oh. So I guess the next item is the appointment of nominations chair. So there are three people. We have three board seats up for election in June, and they are, correct me if I'm wrong, I have William Cover. I wrote these down. I don't know what happened. Oh, Andy Rich and Dan Crosby. Is that correct?
Yes.
Everybody? Okay. So so I don't think any of you can be the nominations chair. I think that's a conflict of interest. But we need another board member to be the nominations chair. And pretty much the employees of the water company, they do all the mailings. And they'll do a mailing that sends out to all the shareholders that we're looking for nominations for people who want to run for this position, for these board positions. And of course, you know, we want you guys to run, obviously. But I need a volunteer for that chair.
I'd like Craig.
Is that Jeff?
That was Jeff nominating Craig.
I don't know if he can do that. Oh. To be a chair. I think he has to be a board member.
Yeah, the bylaws don't specify, but as far as I can recall, it's always been a board member who is not up for election.
Right. So that would leave Jeff Jones, Bill Cover, myself, and John Dashner.
I'm up for election, I think.
Yeah, not Bill Cover, Bruce Utter.
Oh, Bruce Utter. I'm sorry. So any volunteers, or shall I just suggest that Jeff Jones does it?
Jeff. Oh, I think Jeff did it this last year, didn't you, Jeff?
Oh, I think he did.
I think he's a great choice.
My understanding was that it was the new guy, and it's not Bill, because the office does all the work. All we are, some namesake. Not a big deal to volunteer. Anyone?
Well, that's a great choice.
Well, the issue becomes one of, and I've been in this role previously, is that nobody volunteers, so we have to go out and beat the bushes, twist arms. Starting with those current members who are. Whose the terms are expiring to get them to re-up.
Right.
So, Sharon, I do have one other question, and it's a point of clarification. Nothing intended other than just to clarify a question that I have about the election last year was one of fulfilling Penny's obligation. So did we not have with Bruce and John a shorter service time than 3 years?
No. We actually, it was Bruce, John, and wasn't there a third?
Well, Craig.
No, there was, I thought there was a third. Bruce, John.
Jeff Jones ran again, got reelected.
Oh, that's it. So there were three people who were elected, and we had three spots, but I don't believe, I'd have to go back to the election materials. I don't believe we said that one was for a 2-year term.
I don't remember that being in there either, so.
And we should have, because now what we have is next year, there's only one person running. And so it used to be, three, two and two. So we were always replacing two or three directors or reelecting those people. So I didn't know. That was my next question I was going to ask Andrew, and I'm sorry to put you on the spot, is can we extend one person's, I don't know if we can shorten somebody's term or extend somebody's term for, or do a 1 year term, so that way next year we have two people running. Yeah. I don't know what our options are.
Yeah. And unfortunately sitting here today, I don't know either. I'm going to have to research this a little bit with the bylaws in front of me to look into it. This issue wasn't on my radar.
Sorry. My apologies.
Well, I know, but it may not be a valid election, right, Andrew? If we only were authorized to have one person replace the 1 year term.
I don't think we can do that so much.
No, I know, but we already did it. We did it. We didn't do it the way we have to find out if we followed the bylaws with the last election.
No, no, I'm not worried on that respect. There's a doctrine about, you know, officers being seated and directors being seated. And once you're seated, if nobody objects, it takes you to court, you're a director. I'm just worried about going forward and making sure that we get everybody's terms right. So I'll have to refer back to the bylaws and report back to the chair.
Okay, thank you. So that was a good diversion, Andy, but we still need a chair.
I think I just ought to shut my mouth and
No, it was good because I had it on my radar. I should have contacted Andrew prior to the meeting to give him a heads up. So let's see, who are the people who were elected last year? Bruce and John and Jeff. They're very quiet.
I'm on mute.
Oh, well, you're still quiet.
So what's the question, Sharon?
So I need a nominations chair. I need someone, an elections chair for this. And I would, you know, like to know, you don't have to say here and now, the people who are up for election, you know, I want you to know that I want you to run again and stay on the board. I think everybody offers a unique perspective, and I appreciate learning from everybody, and I appreciate what everybody brings to the board and with their experience. So there's that, but I still need a.
I will, willing. Jeff, and I will volunteer if I'm eligible.
I think you are eligible.
He is.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right. We can move on to correspondence.
So we don't have any to share this time.
Okay.
And then billing. So we sent out the last of the 2021 December billing on, I think it was the 22nd we billed. I have three lanes that paid since the last meeting that we had in November, totaling about $3,000. At this point, we do have 20 lanes on file because we are unable to shut off the water. 15 of those out of the 20 are actually lots. I do have three liens on houses that we can send them notices and have them go on a payment plan. And then the last thing I wanted to report was that we had 143 homes that sold in 2021 and 160 last year. So in 2 years, we've had 300 homes change homeowners.
Is it homes and lots or just
combined? Mostly homes, some lots, but mostly homes.
Wow. I'm sorry, Andy, I interrupted you.
I just said, wow.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to add on to one thing that Kathy said. The moratorium on water shutoffs is coming to an end. There's some procedures that the water company needs to jump through to start shutoffs again. So I'm working with Tyler on that and getting compliant with it. But those can resume probably as early as about a month from now. For some shareholders and for others, there will be an extended period of time before the water company could do a shutoff.
It's going to be a lengthy process with the way the moratorium is, and then the shutoff, what is it, the Shutoff Protection Act, the new one that they put out right before COVID and the moratorium got put in place. So we have to go about how we shut off somebody's water by the book. We can't just go out and shut off their water anymore.
Okay. So then, reportable items?
Reportable items. So the additional wholesale water purchase is going to be something we need to discuss in the LRPC. We have the price that is set forth by CCWD and the amount we have to purchase right now. If everybody would like to know, I would say my recommendation is that we would hold off on that wholesale water purchase. We didn't need to have more this last summer. And my hope is right now they're saying we have to purchase another 100 cubic feet per day, 100,000, sorry, cubic feet per day on our allotment. And with the new piping in the ground, if we have the numbers over a year, I believe they're going to be quite a bit less than they used to be. So we might be able to sell them on selling us half of that amount of water. But we will need to compile a little bit more data. I believe until April will be one full year of everybody hooked up and metered. So the additional wholesale water purchase will be something we discuss in quite a bit more detail, that and BORAD at the next LRPC meeting.
So Tyler, what was the price that CCW put forward?
It was a little over $800,000 for the 100 cubic feet, and that's just the right to have it. We still have to pay for the water on top of that.
We paid $850, I think, the last time, right?
Yeah, it went up a tiny bit, and just like with anything, I'm sure it's going to go up small increments about every year.
Okay.
The additional projects, we have all the flanges. We're still waiting on the plugs and caps, so we can go ahead and do the disconnects from the piping. And I'm working on bids coming in from Rolleri, Olson Excavation, and SCMI. I would like to hope that we can get some of them done this summer. It might be the ones that we can actually hand dig and do ourselves that are out of the main roadway. We are also going to have to get a county permit and do paving on 90% of the projects. The letter to the HOA, I think it was Monday after we had our meeting, Bruce had emailed me and let me know that in the, is it the HOA's letter that they put out, the HOA's packet that they put out, I believe it's page 7, they had a very extensive report on how to clean your culvert, what the responsibility was for the homeowners. So I didn't reach out to the HOA to have them do another one. They did a very well job on it. The bark beetle information I posted on our website, the USDA treatment of the California bark beetles and more, just showing people that it's not always a bark beetle that could be attacking your tree. There's multiple things, having too much water on it could be, there were, I think, 9 different pests that they had around here somewhere in that ballpark. It's a 15-page report on how to treat and care for your trees if bark beetles start to show. It does state in it watering twice a month around the canopy of the tree. Pretty much everything I could find on bark beetles says that. They can water, but they recommend only doing it very small amounts, about twice a month, especially during the, if the extended drought went through the winter months and it wasn't getting the water that it's supposed to, it would be okay to do a small amount of watering. My bark beetle people that we usually stop from watering are the ones who make a ring around the tree, turn on the hose, and they leave town. We always see that in the numbers in the morning, and so it's fairly easy to catch those people once they try to do that.
This is Jeff. As a green industry professional, there's a generally two reasons that plants die, either too much water or not enough water. So when you ask a customer a question, are you watering it? And they say, yeah, water it every day. Well, you're watering it too much, or you're either not watering it enough. And if anybody doesn't know, the feeder roots for any plant are at the drip line. So at the edge of the canopy is where you would find them. The general recommendation is to never water natives. If they're here and they're natives, don't ever water them. But putting a hose or a drip line around the base of a tree is totally useless. It does absolutely nothing for helping the tree or the environment.
Yeah. So that's the report states exactly what you're saying right there.
Well, I think we have to be careful about what we post that might imply permission to do this. You know, we've got a 15% state mandate of reducing water usage compared to last year. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, in the past, back when the bark beetle, you know, really raised its ugly head, what, 3 years, 4 years ago, maybe even five, you know, we said absolutely no watering of trees. And I wonder if we shouldn't have that same posture currently.
We do. On our website, it states that there is no watering of forest trees. Dave had let, and I agree, if somebody has an ornamental tree that they just planted and they want to water it a little bit, then to get the roots set, that's fine. But watering a pine tree that is 3 feet, 4 feet around on the bottom, that's just, it's not needed.
Yeah.
No, and we definitely don't promote anybody of watering the forest trees. I think we kind of went over the replace LRPC chair earlier. We're going to discuss that quite a bit more in detail at the next LRPC meeting. And then the treatment plant driveway that was in the special meeting we had in December, you guys approved that I could hire Cooper for it. I went ahead and signed the bid, and he got us on the schedule to have it done spring or early summer, depending on the weather and the temperature.
Excellent. Thank you, Tyler.
Mm-hmm.
So Sharon, I just want to make sure I have the right items added for the next meeting. I'm adding to make sure that the savings bond is completely insured as one item. And then I am the cyber insurance, our services, our license and bonds would be the second to make sure that our documentation and stuff is up to date.
Yeah.
So those two things.
You know, I think in detail, I'd like to see all our data management service providers, like who has access to our data and what they do, and then are they insured and what are their procedures. But I can work with you on that.
Okay. Thank you.
That's what I have.
So one of the things that Tyler was going to do is make sure all the electronic files we have from MC, and it's all on the cloud somewhere.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
I think maybe we have an overall action item about our data management system, including, you know, that everything's backed up to the cloud. The MC.
Okay.
And then the pump station. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, when I receive my digital as-built and the digital map from MC, I should be having them later this week. That will be one of the ones I'll have. Make sure we get it in the cloud. We have it on a external hard drive, and we'll have a actual printed copy of it. So we make sure we kind of have every avenue covered.
Good.
Okay. Is there anything else? Does that answer your question, Dan?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. And I realized I didn't thank Tom for all his work on the LRPC report and everything he's been doing for the LRPC. So I wanted to thank him for that. It's a lot of work. And I don't take it for granted. I just don't always remember to thank people for everything that they're doing. So thank you. Is there anything? Let's see. I think that ends our, we can go to executive session, right?
So stop recording.
Yeah. And I think we need a motion to move to executive session.
Yes.
I move we move to executive session.
Second.
You're second. Oh, Bruce. Okay.
Okay, let me get the recording stopped.
Not that I need to drop off, right?